Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance to order. The time is 3:20, Wednesday, April 2nd. Apologize for the delay. The floor session went a little longer than anticipated. So today, we carried over House Bill 23 from this morning, Kinnick-Garn Bridge, and have some amendments to deal with on that one. And then Senate Bill 218, Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, we'll take that up after the Kinnick-Garn Bridge bill. But for the record, we have Senator Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. Okay, so on House Bill 23, we've had several meetings on this. We've had a CS, we had public testimony, we've had discussion, and so I think we are at a place now for amendments. I believe everybody has the amendments. I think the public hopefully has access to the amendments. So we'll start out with is there anything to come before the committee before we get started here? Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, just confirming for everyone that we're on version R of the bill that the amendments will be made to.
That is correct. Version R. Okay, so with that, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Okay, I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Sure. Amendment number one, what it does is puts into the statute in writing what was alluded to the other day during the one of the executives from Kabata that said that the state will not issue any bonds under the section for building the Kinnick-Garn crossing unless essentially a loan is brought forward from the United States Department of Transportation, essentially TIFIA, which is the Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act of 1998.
Okay, Representative Newman, if you would join us, please.
And I might add, Mr. Chairman, this amendment was put in place with the advice and input from the sponsor of HB 23.
Okay, very good. Representative Newman, you are the sponsor of this bill. Comments on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Mark Newman, Susitna Valley, House District 10. Yes, Mr. Chair, I have worked with Senator Olson on this. This is correct. This is part of one of three funding mechanisms, and I would consider this a friendly amendment.
Okay. Any other questions, comments on Amendment 1? Seeing none, then I'll remove my objection. Is there an additional objection to Amendment 1? If not, Amendment 1 is adopted. Okay. You might as well just stay there, Representative Newman. Amendment 2. Senator Kelly, will you move Amendment 2?
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 2.
Okay, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Suzanne, were you going to discuss this one? Okay. If Ms. Armstrong could join us at the table, this is my amendment. Amendment 2. Suzanne, could you put your name on the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Suzanne Armstrong, staff to Senator Meyer. Amendment number 2 proposes to put into place a sideboard on the authority of Kabata to issue bonds. Under their current authorizing statutes, they're authorized to issue bonds in an aggregate amount not to exceed $500 million plus the cost of issuance. A concern was raised in a previous hearing. I wouldn't say it was a concern, but the question was raised in previous hearings about the authority's ability or retention of their bonding authority if the state is going to go out and issue bonds for this project. So this amendment attempts to address the concern that was raised by stipulating that prior to the issuance of the bonds that Kabata receive legislative approval prior to the issuance of the bonds. And this amendment was drafted in an attempt to, I guess, look into the future that when the authority is looking at expansion or other construction-related activities that it may be necessary to bond for, that it's for the expansion and not merely the initial construction of the bridge.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Armstrong. Yes, it's my understanding at the point in time where they may need this, we will have seen how much traffic and how much use the bridge is getting and whether or not the expansion is warranted. Representative Newman, what do you think about Amendment 2?
I agree with the assumptions made on Amendment number 2. It goes towards future expansion again. And Mr. Chair, as you stated, the Kinnickarn Bridge should be able to have the ability to bring forward the reason for expansions for different toll traffic revenues, for the reason why they'd have to go out and do more bonding. So I would assume that Amendment number 2, or I approve Amendment number 2, is a friendly amendment.
Okay. I'll withdraw my objection. Is there any other objection by committee members to Amendment 2? Seeing and hearing none, then Amendment 2 is also adopted. So we have the CS for House Bill 23R version as amended now back before us. Yes, brief at ease. Okay, we're back. We're at a point now. I do want to go over the fiscal notes, but we can, let's have discussion on the bill itself as amended. And we do have bond counsel here. Devin, I don't know if you're counsel or just our bond expert. Okay. Number two? Okay. Okay. We do have our bond expert here. If there's any questions about bonding and how the process is going to work, and of course we have the sponsor here as well, and the folks from CAPADA. Senator Fairclough, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I asked for a brief at ease for clarification on what was presented to this committee over the course of the last year. I thought that there was some stipulation that was at least brought to our attention that if we required CAPADA to come back to the legislature, that would somehow create some uncertainty in the process in applying for the TIFIA grant. And so my question to bond counsel and to Representative Newman is that it sounds like it's a stage-gated approach, that in stage one, the state has already entered into, or should the state pass this piece of legislation, the state will have approved up to $300 million worth of bond as our commitment to the process as it exists today, and that the amendment that was offered by Senator Meyer on behalf of this body was that if you go to expand, that you would have to come back and ask for the expansion. So there's a couple questions in there, and I'd be interested in both bond counsel as well as Representative Newman's response to that.
And Mr. Mitchell, if you want to go and join Representative Newman at the table so that we have both of you there. Representative Newman, do you want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
To the Chair, Representative Fairclough. Yes, there was concern prior to approval with the TIFIA and the bonds, the TIFIA of the federal government in a three-bond type of a package that we're doing here with the federal STIP loans, monies, and, excuse me. Yes, Representative Fairclough, again, with the three proportional types of funding that are moving forward here, and it considerably changed the bill than what we've had in the past. With the STIP, or State Transportation Infrastructure Plans, is one portion, TIFI is one portion, and the bonding is the other portion. There was some expressed concern by the federal government of coming back onto this. It was mostly with more of the private partners in a prior form of the bill. Again, where the prior partners would have to be subjective if they put tens of millions of dollars out in trying to get out and do an RFP, that the legislature could come back and not approve it after they spend $10 plus million is what it would take to do that. And so that was part of those discussions at that time.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Newman, Amendment number 2, do you believe that that affects only the expansion portion of the project?
Through the Chair, Representative Fairclough, it is my understanding that is for the future expansion of the Kinnickarn Bridge.
Mr. Chairman, when it would go to a four-lane confirmation that that's the process that we would be actually approving. If this bill goes to the floor, is passed and concurred by the House, the $300 million is approved.
Mr. Mitchell, go ahead.
Through the Devin Mitchell, State Debt Manager in the Department of Revenue. The bill that you're considering would provide all of the pieces of the puzzle, of the financing puzzle for the project. The amendment that was made, Amendment number 2, it's my belief that the amendment eliminates the ability of Kubota to issue toll revenue bonds, which would be supported strictly by toll revenue growth of the future for an expansion project or other projects associated with the bridge. For purposes of the current financing, yes, you've authorized up to $300 million of state bonds, toll bonds, that would be supported on a subordinated basis by excess toll receipts. The plan of finance then includes operation and maintenance being paid by the project, federal funds being appropriated to the project, and a TIFIA loan for an additional approximately $350 million that would be supported by a direct pledge of toll revenues of the bridge. There would be no state pledge associated with that TIFIA loan. There has been, and that's, I think, what you're referring to, there's been some concern about this elimination of the ability of Kubota to issue bonds to potentially limit the type of arrangement they could make with TIFIA for purposes of obtaining the TIFIA loan. They won't have that flexibility of saying, well, we're going to issue a bond of Kubota that TIFIA is going to buy on a private placement basis. I believe that the statute as it exists, and it separately references the ability of Kubota to enter into other financial arrangements with TIFIA for their loan from TIFIA. It doesn't have to be a bond issue. That could, like I said a moment ago, provide some flexibility issues that, as I've stated to the committee before, I haven't been directly involved in a TIFIA transaction, so I don't know if that would result in some negative cost to the transaction if the federal folks that work at the TIFIA program would hold that up and say, oh, it's not a bond, it's a different commitment that's been pledged to us, and so therefore we need to extract some penalty from the state of Alaska or from the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority in this case.
Mr. Chairman, just if I could restate my understanding of what the two amendments that we've adopted, how it's altered the bill. The first amendment protects the state of Alaska in not allowing the project to advance if we don't get the TIFIA loans. And the second amendment is to protect the state of Alaska on any other kind of bond issuance that would be expansion or the use of those revenues without coming back to the state to ask.
Through the chair, that's exactly correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. Just for a review for folks that may not have been here at the last meeting, but the estimated total cost of the project is how much?
Representative Newman, you want to do that?
The estimated total cost in House Bill 23 right now includes the ability to have some expansion on there for unexpectable costs. I believe that the total cost on the bridge is approximately $668,000, I think, in the bill. I don't have that exactly in front of me. Is $894,424, and again, that includes extra funds that are required by the federal government if there is any other cost overruns that are unexpected, although any cost overruns on construction, because it's a design-build type of a program, would fall back onto the construction company or the builder.
Okay, just for the record, that was $894 million, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Senator Dunleavy, yes.
Yeah. I think you said 1,000.
Senator Huffman. Clarification?
Yes, please.
That is for a two-lane bridge.
Through the chair, Senator Huffman, yes.
Are there estimates for to expand to four-lane? What would those costs be? Have they been penciled out yet?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I believe... I don't believe that those are done yet, you know, for the expansion in the future into four lanes. Just with this original amount of funds here, when you're talking this kind of money, you know, 1 or 2 years of delay or changes or extensions of when it goes to four lanes can be up to, you know, $30-40 million. So when we get to that point, we'll be able to have a better accurate appraisal on that.
Senator Dunleavy, go ahead.
Like I said, I just want to walk through a couple things for the public. So, but 894, two lanes, $300 million in this action that we would do today would basically be the if once it's approved, signed into law, $300 million is the bounding amount for this particular package, correct?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. and the other funding is just give us the just a couple parts one more time for the record.
Through the chair, the additional funding to the state-issued bonds, and that's a not-to-exceed amount, the $300 million.
Right.
The anticipated project expenditure amount was $251,495,000 with some additional money for reserves and costs of issuance. The TIFIA loan was anticipated to be $341.3 million at the last analysis, and the additional federal aid that was needed was $226 million, which would be in addition to funding that's currently available of $18.9 million available but unobligated. And then the current fiscal year's proposed appropriation of $55 million.
And I think at the last meeting, going back to the bonds, you said $300 was the max to be issued, and if for whatever reasons tolls didn't cover, I think we termed it the worst possible scenario, we'd be looking at the state would be $350, correct? Somewhere along lines?
Through the chair, it was a little more conservative than that. I think I said $450 million as a worst-case scenario if there was not a nickel that came from tolls to pay any of the state toll bonds.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we look at the $300 million that is being proposed under this bill as a maximum spend from a state perspective on capitalizing the project, and we talk about annual payments of $20 to $25 million, that's what was suggested of annual payments for that bonding amount. And then what you just spoke to Senator Dunleavy was the maximum if we paid that out over 20 years at an interest rate that we've chosen, and that would be a future liability of the state. So when would you anticipate, at least under a project scenario, that the state would begin letting bonds for this type of a project. Is it in year 1 through 3? Is it in year 3 through 5? Is it in the out years or the early years?
Through the chair, it would be sooner rather than later, as we need to obligate the state before we're going to be able to spend additional federal dollars. So we would anticipate that you would see debt service ramping up on the operating side in the next couple of years, assuming that the bill was approved, the TIFIA loan was obtained, and the project was on its way.
Mr. Chairman,
sure.
Is that 1 to 3 or 3 to 5 then? Or 2, are you trying to?
1 to 3.
Thank you.
Okay, additional questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mitchell, as you look at page 5, under section 5 there, where it talks about the intention of the legislature, line 17 actually is what it is, the validity of the pledge, where it talks about the intention of the legislature that a pledge may be in respect of bonds of the authority or bonds of the state. Could you clear that up or make it plainer to me that why it says that and why it says and, it doesn't say and?
Sure. Through the chair, the language as it was previously written was in place only for the authority's bonds, and now it's, since we're creating the authority for the state to issue bonds as well, it's for either the authority or the state bonds to be that pledge to be valid and binding, and so that's why there's the clarification.
Mr. Chairman, I can continue. So as you, as a bond expert, are you in favor of that clause that's in there, or do you have reservations about it?
Through the chair, I don't have any reservation about this. In fact, I would be in favor of it, that if we're going to consider the state issuing bonds, that we would want to have this language that made it clear that the pledge was, in fact, binding and valid.
My next question, Mr. Chairman, are the payments on the TIFIA loan backed by a moral obligation of the state or some other payment obligation?
Through the chair, not in the scenario that's been presented in the CS to HB 23.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks, Senator Olson. Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair, just to follow up, Senator Olson, and to just verify, the last week in Thay, so again, the top end of exposure to the state and worst-case scenario for bonding is $450 million.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. And TIFIA, as was just stated, is outside that. It's not an issue. It's not incorporated in this $450. In other words, we don't have a moral obligation for TIFIA.
Through the chair, operation and maintenance will be paid first. TIFIA will be paid second. If the revenues are insufficient, TIFIA would need to negotiate with Kabata to come up with a plan to make themselves whole. Whether that was an extension of the loan, a lot of those things are all going to be, they're going to have to be negotiated at the beginning of that financing. None of those options are going to include the state of Alaska appropriating money to pay that revenue debt, that TIFIA debt.
And through the chair, if the toll scenario services the TIFIA loan, what is left over is going to be servicing the bonds for the state.
Through the chair, that's correct. To the extent there's excess revenue, it would flow over and be available to the state to appropriate for this debt service or for other eligible highway projects of the state.
Thank you.
On that point, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Mitchell, as I look at what's going on there, it's going to be the operations and maintenance is going to be the first cut that's happened. The second is going to be paying back the TIFIA, and if there are enough revenues, you're going to go to the toll revenue bonds, and then last is the state of Alaska going to be paid back for the, if there is enough money to go ahead and we're the fourth in line, I guess is essentially what I'm saying. Is that correct?
Through the chair, we're third in line in the sense that if there isn't excess toll collection for the toll revenue bonds, the state will be obligated to consider appropriating money to pay that debt service. So the state would be relieved of that obligation in the event of there being excess toll revenues beyond O&M and TIFIA requirements. And then you're correct, to the extent that there's revenue beyond even the subordinated toll revenue bond debt service, that would be available for other projects.
Go ahead, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not worried about more tolls coming in. That seems to be the least of the concern, since we have been looking at the worst case scenario, and sometimes the most likely scenario is going to be that the tolls are going to be insufficient for going across there, because as I see things going on, if you have a choice between paying a toll or going around the other way, you're going to go around the other way. And there are, you know, granted there are going to be a number of people that are there. My concern is that we are still going to need a direct appropriation to go ahead and come up with monies in case the TIFIA has to be paid back. Is that true?
Through the chair, no, we're not going to have to pay any of the TIFIA portion of the loan. The appropriation you'd need to consider would be that associated with the toll revenue bonds of the state, the $300 million that is a separate and distinct component of the financing from the TIFIA loan.
So if you're saying that the state of Alaska is not on the hook for the TIFIA loan if the tolls are short?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson. And you bring up a good point. I know, Devin, you say you're not an expert in TIFIA loans, but it seems logical to me that TIFIA isn't going to loan this money unless they feel pretty good that the bridge is a viable project. Is that safe to say?
Through the chair, I believe so. My understanding of the TIFIA program is that it's designed to be available for projects such as this that are relatively large and otherwise perhaps difficult to finance on a long-term basis at favorable rates that such as those that TIFIA has available to it. So it's part of the larger highway, the Federal Highway Transportation Program viewpoint. So, yes.
Okay. Representative Newman, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I might add is some of the checks and balances that have been put into the new CS, again, is the TIFIA approval of the revenue, which should be adequate before they will issue the TIFIA bond. And also, again, as is stated on page 4, lines 23 through 5, that bonds may not be issued unless the State Bond Committee finds, based on information submitted, that the toll revenue is reasonably available to commit and cover the costs. So the checks and balances for two different entities.
So not to be a pessimist, Representative Newman, but what if you don't get the TIFIA loans?
Pardon?
What if you didn't get the TIFIA loans? Is there?
What do I think of the TIFIA loans?
No. What if you did not get them?
If there's no TIFIA loans approved, then it would the financing would have to come back to Kubota for a refinancing plan.
And then ultimately back to us, I guess?
Yes. I don't understand the question.
Oh, okay. Senator,
so if it comes back to Kubota, what do you anticipate is going to be happening? What consideration are they going to be giving?
If the TIFIA loan was not approved,
yes,
the Kinnick-Arm Bridge and Toll Authority would develop another financing plan to move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Denling, did you have a question? Hedge on the list.
I think I may have asked it, but I may be asking some questions of others here in just a moment on going back to the anticipated plan for the Glenn Highway build-out over years.
Yeah, we do have Mr. DOT here, so Senator Hoffman.
My questions are for DOT as well.
Okay. Senator
Olson? One last question for the sponsor. As you talked about the roughly $900 million to go ahead and build the bridge, is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, sir.
What have you anticipated what the costs are going to be for all the improvements that have to be made over on the, essentially the north, the west-northwest side, over on the McKinsey side, and then what that's going to cost to go ahead and take that, because obviously the Kinnick by Kinnick Goose Bay area is going to need to be some type of improvements made there, as well as what's going to have to be on this side, what those costs are going to be to get Government Hill and that those arteries up to speed for this bridge.
The Chair, Senator Olson, actually I'm glad you asked that question. Currently in 2014, the stretch of the Parks Highway between Wasilla and Big Lake will start construction for a four-lane divided highway. So that will be completed starting this year. It'll take it a 3 to 4 year project. In 2016, a four-year divided highway on the Kinnikus Bay Road will start in 2016.
The cost?
The cost to the Parks Highway expansion right now is approximately $100 million, and I believe it's around that on KGB, and they're included in the state transportation infrastructure plan currently. So those are moving forward as part of the transportation plan. But part of the outbuild on this is the unique fact that while the gas pipelines that are going on, there is the Mansu Borough, in anticipation of future projects, created an 800-foot utility corridor from mile 73, which is just north of Willow. It basically goes straight south down to Point McKenzie Kinnick Arm Bridge area, as opposed to going southeast and then back around Cook Inlet through Wasilla. That's a 32-mile stretch of road. I would anticipate, and it's been talked about by Mr. Otteson in prior meetings, that probably the best future expansion, again, would be to build the road that would go straight north, that would send all the highway traffic, the semis and stuff that currently go down the Glen Highway through Wasilla, KGB, and all those areas would just go straight north through 32 miles of land, which currently now is all government land, except for the last half mile, and it's the seller is a willing seller. So quite frankly, it would reduce the cost of any of those future expansion projects. You know, when you look at the Glen Highway and what it costs for road rehabilitation, last time we did that was $55 million. That's approximately every 5 years, but if you're taking all the trucks, semis that are going to Prudhoe Bay, Fairbanks, all that stuff that comes in through the Port of Anchorage, sends it straight north, it makes that highway last much longer. So there would be savings there. There's right now discussions, because Wasilla is so compacted with traffic and congested with traffic, and there's a 2 to 3 hour wait at times to get through there, that there's a Wasilla bypass that would have to be looked at. That project would not have to be done. Future expansions on Kinnick Goose Bay Road would not have to be done, because it would all be moving straight north again. The Wasilla to Big Lake, and then Big Lake does not prefer to have a highway running through it to take truck traffic to the port. So when you look at those five projects, it's much cheaper just to go 32 miles on bare land where there's no land acquisition by the state to do that, no traffic control. When you look at the cost of those other five projects, to amortize that 32 miles would be minimal, especially when you consider that both gas pipeline proposals, Alaska Gas Line Development and all the producers' pipeline, both come down that corridor. Now, to put those pipelines in, they have to put in a rudimentary road. It's not a large stretch, I think, to make that road a little bit wider through that 800-foot corridor, and you already have an expressway through there, again, because the pipeline is expected to come through there. With a lot of EIS is already done on that. Bridges will be built to carry those pipelines and trucks through there, and to create an expressway straight north.
Okay. The last question I had has to do, you said it was $100 million to go ahead and essentially take the western side and connect it up to the Parks Highway. Is that correct? What's the cost for the Government Hill side?
I believe the part on the future expansion for phase two right now is estimated for a total cost, including this current cost, at about $1.2 billion.
$1.2 billion?
Total, including the current cost on this, so another $300 to $400 million for phase two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and we do have someone here from DOT as well to talk about roads. Senator Dunham.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, who this would be directed to, but the anticipated traffic volume, who is that best? Is that behind you or is that next to you?
Through the chair, I think it would be either Judy Dardis here from Kubota. She might be able to address the question.
And one last question possibly for you, Devin, is on the TIFIA loan, again, what is this the schedule for payments?
Through the chair, it will depend on the final financing, but we would have semi-annual payments. We're just anticipating levelized debt service rather than trying to match debt service to any projection of potential excess revenue. And so, as was declared earlier, 20 to 25 million was arranged that, or 21 to 25 million was arranged that was provided earlier for a 20-year time frame. And that's contingent upon interest rate. Right now, we'd be closer to the $21 million range.
Per year?
Per year.
25 years?
Yeah.
20 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. Through the chair, I misspoke. 20 years, yes. 20 years. Saying yes too easily.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Representative Newman? Then I'm going to have folks from DOT or Kubota come up. Go ahead, Representative Newman.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add that, too. Currently, right now, we have over 19,000 vehicles per day at the front end of Kinnick Goose Bay Road, and I believe that DOT testified here prior that it would be around 10,000 vehicles a day to cover the cost. So, and I believe they did a comparison to the Juneau Douglas Bridge on that and the size of communities, but DOT can maybe answer those. Or Judy Doherty from Colorado.
Okay. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I'm shuffling papers because I'm looking to see if, I don't recall if we've included a freight mobility study. I know that Anchorage did one from the port, and I'm wondering if we've calculated truck traffic that would be diverted, which is pretty heavy on the Glen Highway. And they would save time, money, as well as fuel. So I'm wondering if we looked at freight mobility for an insured, or at least a fairly certain traffic count for at least that portion of the general public that would actually save time and reduce cost to Alaskans to transport goods north.
The Chair, Representative Fairclough, I believe you're right, and we can DOT or Kubota can answer some of those other ones too. Add it a little further.
Okay. Additional questions for the sponsor or for our bond expert? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. DOT, do you want to join us now, I think? Judy, you might as well join us. Go for round two here, it looks like. Okay, so I think you want to start, Senator Dunleavy? I know Senator Hoffman had a question as well, but go ahead, Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And if you could, put your name on the record.
Yes. Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development for the Department of Transportation.
Okay. I'm Judy Doherty with Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Okay. And then if you could just let Director Kweshna, either one, just tell us which one, Senator Dunleavy, or maybe both.
Yeah, that would be it. Maybe both. So, again, we've talked about some of this in prior meetings, but, again, for the record today, what were some of the estimated traffic counts that were discussed regarding the bridge? Minimums, averages, minimums and averages.
The bridge has been modeled for traffic. For this particular plan of finance, the maximum would be 21,000 vehicles a day, which is a two-lane capacity. The project only needs to carry two lanes in order to cover the TIFIA debt service. So counter to the previous plan of finance, which was the P3, we anticipated that the tolls would need to cover the full amount of the payments to the private partner. And in this case, you know, it's considerably less. So the project doesn't depend on ever expanding to four lanes.
Right. But minimum traffic counts that have been discussed, 9,000 vehicles. We hear a comparison with the bridge over here. What were some of the traffic counts that were discussed?
I think if you look in your packet, the HDR has responded to the 9,000 vehicle assertion that you heard in public testimony. It's not reliable for the bridge. That study was not conducted to evaluate traffic on the bridge. It was conducted for the Palmer or for the Wasilla alternative corridor study along the Parks Highway in Wasilla.
So I know there's information in our package, but for folks listening, what were some of the counts that were discussed?
The counts that were discussed for
traffic over the bridge.
During public testimony? I don't follow your question. I'm sorry.
Was there a discussions as to potential numbers of vehicles crossing the bridge?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we're anticipating that the project will reach 21,000 vehicles
upon completion.
Not immediately upon completion. Early traffic We expect to be around 6,000 vehicles a day.
Additional questions?
Oh, not right now, thanks.
Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. On the, I had some other ones, but since we're on vehicle count, with this being a toll bridge and the time delays that a toll bridge requires, what is the maximum number of vehicles that can go through the two-lane bridge?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, a two-lane roadway is anticipated to carry about 21,000 vehicles a day maximum. That's approximately what's experienced on the Parks Highway.
And how long do you anticipate one vehicle getting through the toll? They go there, they're stopped. The delay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the tolling will be all electronic. Cars will have a transponder. There will be no delay in getting through the tolling mechanism. There will be a...
Even tourists?
Correct. There'll be a backup system that is a license plate recognition.
So if you're coming in and you're a tourist traveling through there, how do they get charged?
Through the chair, the primary traffic in Alaska is not, with tourists, is not necessarily in their personally owned vehicles. We will have arrangements with all of the rental companies, rental cars, rental Winnebagos, and that sort of thing.
So the vehicles won't stop?
That's correct.
I think
that's how they do it in other states, correct? Because I know I received some tickets at my house for my daughter in California. So
surprise, surprise.
Yeah, no kidding. Senator Huffman, go ahead.
My question is to DOT regarding the additional four-lane construction. It was stated that about 900 for the two-lane bridge and $900 million for the construction of the two-lane bridge and additional $300 million for the four-lane bridge, and I find that a little bit inconceivable. When we looked at the audit that was performed and submitted to the legislature, on page 19, I think they were talking about a four-lane bridge at that point, and the construction costs back then, and this is there's considerable delays in the construction of that project, but they said north of $1.6 billion, so I'm wondering what your estimate is as a DOT official. If we build a two-lane bridge and then, say, 4 or 5 years later, we decide that we need to go to a four-lane bridge, what is your envisioned cost? It would seem to me that we would be looking at a like number, maybe reduced, but maybe even increased because of cost of construction for a 4 to 8 year delay. So I'm wondering, do we have a better guesstimate as to what an additional two-lane bridge would cost, say 10 years out after the construction of the first two-lane bridge?
Through the chair, Senator,
$300 million seems very low to me.
Well, a couple reasons why that might be that low. The bridge will already have been built, the piles and the spans. You'll be widening the span, but you will not be building the uprights that support the bridge. The embankment leading to the bridge will already have been purchased. We'll have the right-of-way. Kubota will have the right-of-way. I believe on the Anchorage side, they will already have built the widened embankment that holds the road. An awful lot of the work will have been done already by phase one. So you're not incurring cost. They're building a tunnel underneath Government Hill. That will already have been widened enough for four lanes. Property will have been purchased. The utilities will already have been relocated. So all these things that are making phase one more expensive per mile will have been done, and phase two will benefit from that work. I think those are some of the key reasons why that number is where it's at.
So then can you rectify, do you stand by the 300 additional million for the phase two? four-lane bridge? And if so, how do you rectify the $1.2 billion that with the $900 and the $300 coming to the $1.2 and what was proposed initially by Kabata at $1.6 billion? That's still a far reach of, you know, just south of $500 million.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman.
Well, I'm asking this to the department. They are more in constructing bridges, constructing roads, and Kabata has no experience in this.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Mr. Austin, go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the two projects, the two numbers are very hard to reconcile just directly. They start with different assumptions about the 3P approach involved a profit on top of everything. You had a 3P constructor, financier, designer operating with much higher rates of interest on the project. With a profit motive on top of that, this is a very different model. This is a much leaner model in terms of the state's paying interest on approximately one-third of the cost to construct, not on three-thirds. The state's paying a lower rate of interest on that same borrowing. The state's not paying profit on 100% of the cost of the project. Those things make these two cost estimates very hard to compare side by side and bring them into some kind of understanding as to which one is common sense. That's really the value of this approach. The state's taking some more risk here, but with that risk, they assume they're also getting a better deal.
So the final question is, then you stand by the $300 million for the phase two to build an additional two lanes, in your best guesstimate?
Yes, that's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and then, Judy, did you have something you wanted to add as well?
Well, yes, Mr. Chairman. The estimate for phase two is actually $550 million. It's not $300 million. That includes the widening of the bridge and, well, excuse me, it's the bridge itself. There are project extensions that are part of phase two, which include 9.5 miles of two-lane roadway along Point McKenzie Road. The bridge itself could be the $300 million, but the project extensions and the connections to Ingrid Gamble, those are all part of phase two that are options to add once traffic is at a point where those extensions might be necessary. So I just want to make sure that we're completely transparent on the numbers here, that everyone understands that the bridge itself has been talked about kind of as a segment, but there are other parts of the project that have been included in all of our project development to date.
No, actually, I'm glad you clarified that, because it sounds like you two are on the same page as far as the bridge itself at $300 million, but then when you include the other components, the roads on both sides, it could be up to 550.
That's correct.
Okay. Additional, Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Judy, can you tell us what your work experience was before you went to work at Kabata?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Fairclough. I was with the Department of Transportation. I still consider myself to be Department of Transportation for 22 years. I worked my way up through the ranks, starting as a design engineer to a project manager to the highway design chief for Central Region. A large part of my career was spent on the Seward Highway between Byrd and Girdwood, moving that roadway down onto the mud flats. So I feel I have, you know, extensive experience, and I consider myself a state servant, you know, like all of you. I'm a public servant, and I love my job. So I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see the support that we've seen for this project to date, and I'm willing to stand behind it and the work that Kubota has done over the years.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Judy, for your service to the state.
Yeah, thank you, Judy. So it's safe to say, with your many years in with DOT, that you know something about roads and bridges. Is that safe to say?
I believe that's safe, yes.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just doing some scribbling and some rough calculating, and I'm certainly not trying to put anyone on the spot. But so A max of 21,000, I'll say, vehicles.
Okay.
A minimum of 6,000. Average of 13,500. And I know we're dealing with cars and trucks and so forth, and we haven't really established per se the toll. But so 21,000 max, 6,000, a minimum 13,500 cars per day. And again, just indulge me for a second. So if it was $10 a toll, $135,000 per day, and if you did 300 days, I'm just playing with averages here because I doubt there's going to be traffic that's higher and lower on certain days. For 300 days, that's $40,500,000. And then the TIFIA repayment was $25 million per year. So in total, you have $40,500,000 under this rough winging scenario. $25 million per year to pay off TIFIA, leaving $15 million to deal with the state bonds and roughing up the state bonds at 251, roughly. Over 20 years, payment would be about $12,500,000. And I could be, I could be wrong on all these calculations, but so under this scenario, both TIFIA and the state bonds could potentially be paid if your average car load is $13,500 per day, $10 a toll. Yeah, anyway.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, you have the advantage of the TIFIA.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, okay, so the anticipated number of vehicles and what they're going to be charged obviously is going to be key to the repayment. I do need to ask a question that's similar but transitions out a little bit on the deals with the Parks Highway, the Glen Highway.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Last meeting we were discussing Kubota, we brought up the concept of what's going to happen to the Glen because there was a bit of confusion, at least on my part, initially that there was already a plan for the Glen and that there was already money earmarked for the Glen to expand the Glen 3 lanes north, 3 lanes south. And I think what you did was clarify and say, right now there's not necessarily a plan in place that is going to be moving that direction. I mean, there's been things discussed, but is there a plan in place to expand the Glen in that manner?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. The Glen Highway, as far out as the Anchorage-Mattsu border, which is essentially at the Kinnick River, is the planning authority for that portion of the Glen is AMATS, the Anchorage Metropolitan Transportation Authority. They have a series of projects laid out in their long-range plan for widening the Glen, improving interchanges, all the things you would think would be necessary as you go along. Most of those projects, though, are not yet funded. There's no design work being done. There's no environmental work being done. And if you understand the federal process to do those projects, it's 7 to 10 years from the moment you start to where you could see work happening. So yes, there's a plan, but no, there's no active work except for the work that was funded by the GO bond issue just last year. They're at Artillery Road and into Eagle River and widening the bridges there at Eagle River. So a small piece has been funded. Most of the work is still on a plan, not yet actively being worked on, and not funded yet at this moment. So I hope that clarifies the distinction.
It does. Thank you.
Senator Hoppe.
Mr. Chairman, on the total, Senator Dunleavy says that he used a $10 figure for the toll fee. And in your calculations to pay back the TIFIA loan and the other scenarios with the traffic count, what was the number used in those calculations for the toll?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we anticipate the toll starting at $5 per passenger car and roughly $18 per truck in the opening year, and tolls will grow with inflation. So 2.5% or something like that.
Numbers.
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Hoffman. Okay, additional questions? Okay. Say none. Mr. Austin, you have some more comments? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I can just make one comment. I think this point is lost by many people who look at this project and question the numbers. There's no other highway project in the state that's proposing to pay all of its M&O and much of its capital cost. So if we don't build this project and we need to build capacity between Anchorage and Mattsu, we will have to build it along the Glen Corridor. And to the best of my knowledge, that will be built with federal aid or state funds, none of it being paid for by the user base. That's a remarkable difference here.
And the cost of that was about $600 million. Is that the number you gave us?
$600 million, but once you get into Mat-Su and you start moving traffic through the West Silla corridor, there's many more dollars to be engaged. I mean, the traffic that we're talking about serving here is traffic is because of growth between in these two population centers. It's not traffic being created by the bridge.
Right.
And that traffic has to be served somehow, some way.
And, of course, the other advantage is that it gives you two ways in and two ways out.
Absolutely.
So if we have a wreck, which happens on the Glen Highway. Okay. Senator Kelly.
Quick question. You said $600 million.
Senator Kelly, use your microphone, please.
You said $600 million. There was a cough right when you said an operative word there, and I lost what you were talking about.
Senator Kelly, through the chair, the $600 million is the current estimate by Central Region for widening the Glen out to the Mat-Su Borough area. I'm not exactly sure whether that's at the Parks Y or if that's all the way into Wasilla, but that's the number that been using internally.
Senator Dunley.
Just to clarify, earlier when Representative Newman was speaking, he didn't mention the expansion that's already in progress in the parks going north and the planned expansion of Kinnick Goose Bay. They're going to happen regardless of Kibata.
That is correct, Senator Dunleavy.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Additional questions from committee members? Additional comments? Senator Olson?
Mr. Otteson, you've been here a long time. You are looked at as the authority with the Department of Transportation. Obviously, you've got experiences that most of us here don't want to go through because of some of the difficulties that were there. You were here when the recession happened to the state of Alaska. Price of oil went down, and things looked grim in the future, like they're looking now. And as you look at the recession that hit Alaska back in the 80s, even in the 90s that was there, where people were moving out of state, there seems to be a level of discomfort that the number of vehicles that are going to be going across there, or that a large part of the development that would be happening if we have a booming economy would be affected. But with the state's budgets going down, we've already had a significant decrease in both the operating and the capital budget, and continue to go down in light of the fact that the state's savings accounts, mainly the CBR and the SBR, are going to be down towards zero here in just a number of years. Does that cause you concern that we are not in a good position to go ahead and take on a big project like this that may indeed cause us to be insolvent here in the near future, or directly affect our bond rating, as those bankers from New York look at us and say, AAA now, but things are looking pretty bleak for you. Just comment on that if you have any ideas or words of wisdom related to that, because that's what's on all of our minds as we, especially those that have been here in the legislature for a long time. There's obviously two at this table that I'm surrounded by that have been here longer than I have, but we plan on being around for a while longer. So just to kind of give us your experience.
With all due respect, I can't speak to the total issue of the state solvency and, you know, reserve accounts. That's probably for Department of Revenue and others. But I have been in the state since 1977. I've worked in transportation since 1987. I was here for the crash in about 87. I saw $10 oil. I saw friends leave town. I understand what you're talking about. But the state seems to bounce back. The state is a resource state, and its economy, it weathered the 2008, recession almost exceedingly well. We right now are doing a traffic study on the Dalton Highway, looking at about 6 or 8 different developments that are happening up there. And even if 3 or 4 of those don't happen, there's a lot of new activity that's coming our way. There's oil shale on the slope. There's Point Thompson. There's offshore oil. There's Ambler Copper. There's the LNG project. For Fairbanks, and after that, there's the pipeline compressed natural gas project. Each of those is going to require people to work on those projects, people to live. A lot of the living, we understand Anchorage has got a housing conundrum with not enough land to build housing, and I think growth will continue. There may be some ups and downs. Even the 2008 recession only dropped our traffic here in Alaska about 4% at the worst, and then it's already come back up. So those are relatively minor perturbations in a long-term upward trend.
Continue, Mr. Chairman. The 2008 recession that was nationwide had little effect on us. You know that as well as I do, right, partly because we were blessed with high oil. I'm talking about the recession that was happening back in the mid-80s that you alluded to, where the price of oil went down and we were in a bad situation where there was a pretty high-level government official who was just short of indictment because of what was going on there. And as you look, but to go on to some of those projects that were there that you're talking about that are up on the Dalton, that are, they're going to require the state to have some type of financial input, don't you think? And where are we going to get the money if we're starting to deplete it by some of these projects that we are already going in the hole on?
Well, just for example, through the chair, Senator Olson, you know, the Ambler Copper, which is really not one mine, but potentially three or four mines, very large, very high grade, very long-lived, it doesn't make sense for the state to invest in that directly if industry can finance those improvements itself, which is exactly why DOT transferred that road project to ADA, because they are the financing arm that can make that happen in a way that doesn't add to the state's general fund contribution. I think this project, with the TIFIA loan not being counted against the state's debt, not being the moral obligation of the state, and being borne by user fees, is a perfect example of building transportation in a way that costs us less in overall state costs than as opposed to just doing it from general funds or GO bonds or federal dollars on a slow basis. We're getting a chance to build this, and quite frankly, somebody else is going to pay a large piece of the tab.
Okay. Anything else, Senator Olson?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, it's maybe like apples and oranges, but it sounds like, you know, the original plan for the Kubota Bridge was a 3P project. Then it evolved into the state taking the bulk of it. But I guess more important.
Can I just speak to that? Because the original plan was to build this with earmarks. That was the original plan. And then it turned out the earmarks became kind of a tainted issue, and Senator Stevens had to protect them. He did that by relabeling them to become flexible money, and only half of the earmark was then reserved for the project. And then the 3P grew out of that because they needed a new funding source, and the 3P couldn't have been selected at the worst time because shortly thereafter the 2008 recession hit, and the entire 3P industry globally basically started getting worried about their liabilities. The go-go-go of the pre-2008 era ended, and the financiers wanted much more confidence that the dollars would be there to pay those bonds off. And that really was the weakness of 3Ps. They had a different mindset as the financiers looked at those projects. So I think now what you've got is a project that's, the state's got some of its own money in the game, it's got some of its federal funds coming into the game in a slow, sustained way, and it's got a large contribution from Kubota, slightly more than one-third, from TIFIA.
Okay. Anything else, Senator Olson?
I just see that as the same way that as you see what's going on with the Ambler Mining District, which is in my area that I come from. It's starting out as a business thing. The next thing you know, the state's going to be asked to tap on the shoulder to say, hey, you know, you've got a bunch of land here, or we need to have some help. And that's where I see that issue evolving the same way, just on a different level. But my real question has to do with, as we look at the money that's going on for this project here, we're obviously going to have to go ahead and take it from other statewide projects. What are the plans for those other projects that are only half done from a transportation standpoint?
Mr. Austin?
Senator Olson, through the chair, as my testimony previously indicated, we are going to delay some projects, but we technically will not be canceling those projects. The vast majority of projects will be built with a delay of as little as 1 or 2 years. Many will not be delayed at all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I think I asked that question earlier. I was concerned about the new Seward Highway, and you assured me anyway that would continue. Senator Kelly, I believe you had a comment? Or
just a quick comment. And Senator Olson, I don't mean to suggest in any way that your thinking is irresponsible, because I think we all at this table have the same kinds of thoughts about the future and bringing our reserves down. But I would remind us that it was in the middle of the Depression that they built the bridges and the dams in America. And I think that was very far-sighted, and you would think that if you found yourself in a situation like 1934 or whatever, would you start talking about Grand Coulee Dam? You probably wouldn't. But I think one of the things that allows me to look at this project and get out of that mindset, and I come from the $9.57 oil era in the legislature, but to get out of that mindset is to look what happened in the 30s, and I think we wish we would have built some infrastructure or maybe stretched ourselves a little bit to build some infrastructure during that period of time when we didn't have money. Finally, if I find myself in tough economic times, I would feel much better if I had the infrastructure to build my way out of it, rather than to be sitting in tough economic times and saying, oh my gosh, we don't even have a bridge across there and we can't expand our community. So I think it's kind of in a way you think about it, and I respect the way you're thinking about it, because everybody at this table on different projects is thinking in different ways about, oh my gosh, the future, it's looking ugly, we better not spend the money. And then we look at this and we say, oh, we probably should invest the money, or the gas line, we're investing a ton of money in that. Those are the things that we just have to go through, and you have to look at the future sometimes regardless of the circumstances, and just kind of get visionary and dream big. And I guess the last thing I would say is that our principal city, I don't happen to live there, but our principal city is in tough shape as far as being surrounded and no way to expand. The population there isn't going to stop growing, and the stresses that come from the population moving to Mat-Su don't seem to help Anchorage that much. Prices are still remarkably high. I just think this is a pretty good project, and we'll look back on this and say, I'm glad we did that even when it was tough. So.
Okay. Was there any other comments before I have Representative Newman come up? Senator Hoffman, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that I just came from a groundbreaking for a bridge out in western Alaska. It's it was good to, and I know what a new bridge, the dream of a new bridge will bring to people of the state. I was working with the department on the Lignacuc Bridge for close to 20 years, and it was great to finally see that groundbreaking, that it is going to be a great bridge, and maybe this one won't take as long, but I would like to thank the department for their persistence in pushing that project through.
Happy to do so, Senator.
Yep.
Happy.
All right. Thank you very much. I think at this time let's have the sponsor and Ms. Armstrong come up. We need to review the fiscal notes, and then I want to give Representative Newman opportunity for last comments. I got a note here saying you're needed over in House Finance. So,
old bridge across the Lincoln.
Yeah, why don't you come on up to Ms. Cunningham. Or Ms. Armstrong, sorry.
I haven't been called that in a while.
It's been a long, long day. Yeah, she used to be at Cunningham. Okay. Representative Newman, you need to go, so why don't you give us any departing remarks?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. There's been a lot of talk about the traffic revenues and advantages to this project, but there's one thing that hasn't been talked about, and I probably have come to realize this more than ever now that I've been doing the Health and Social Services budget for the last couple of years. A large part of that budget is the $1.5 million Medicaid budget that we're looking at. It's going to be a huge part of our budget in coming years. And I cannot help but think, what would happen to our communities if we don't have infrastructure projects like this in our communities in the future? And so I had Hess do a chart for me on the growth of Medicaid, and it's gone up 5.56% in the last 10 years. There was a slight dip in that for several years, and that's when we were spending $2 and $3 billion a year in capital budget for projects. That dip happened because we had jobs in our communities. We're coming into a time in the legislature when we have very little money available for those capital projects. And I use that Medicaid budget, and I use that as a measurement of the health of our communities in this state. It literally is a measurement of the health of Alaska. When we're coming into a time when we don't have those finance projects, infrastructure projects that will attract capital money from other entities who want to invest in Alaska to turn our resources into jobs. If we don't have projects like this that go into this, it's going to have a $5 billion economic impact in the heart of Alaska. In a time when we don't have capital fund projects, the stresses that we will feel in our families because of the lack of those finances, the stresses that will come and cause alcohol abuse, drug abuse, sexual abuse, family abuse, spousal abuse, those will happen when we don't have jobs in our communities. This will cause our budgets to increase, not just in HES, but in corrections, public safety, law. I think about those things a lot, Mr. Chair. I think about them a whole lot since I've been doing this health and social services budget. What happens to the strength and viability of our communities if we don't have infrastructure projects that put this type of money into our communities at a time when we don't have these? We have to do everything we can to try and do that, to protect our people, to protect them from those evils that are going to come. When communities come and talk to me now, that's what I talk to them about, is helping them brace for the future, because I think that that is such an important part that this Alaska State Legislature partner with our local communities to inform them of what I expect the future to be. We all know it's coming. We don't have those types of funds coming. We have to have infrastructure projects like this that put those economic diversification opportunities into our state, into our community. We will feel those pressures. We have to do everything we can to mitigate them. Projects like the Kinnickarn Bridge, where we put economic opportunities, jobs into our communities, will help protect them from those evils. I think projects like this are very important. And again, I'm probably a little more emotional about this since I've been doing this health and services budget, but I look at it very closely. And I look at the health of our state and the health of our communities. And that just scares the heck out of me, Mr. Chair. There's been a lot of great work done by this committee, by the governor's office, and others, and I just want to say thank you for all of that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Newman is needed over in House Finance. Do we have additional questions for him? Okay. Thank you, Representative Newman. All right. Ms. Armstrong, fiscal notes. Can you go over the fiscal notes with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Suzanne Armstrong, staff to Senator Meyer. There are two fiscal notes before the committee for consideration. The first is dated March 24, 2014. It is for OMB Component 121, Department of Revenue, Taxation and Treasury, Treasury Division. It indicates in the fiscal note that in FY15, $10,000 will be required in general funds for the purposes that are explained on the back. Most of them pertain to travel for Treasury staff between Juneau and Anchorage to coordinate the contract for the transfer of excess revenue over operations and maintenance in TIFIA. FY16 travel expenditures are to negotiate credit rating with analysis prior to selling the first series of bonds. As the fiscal note explains, or as it contemplates, the series of bonds will be sold in August of FY16, and then that's why you see an FY17, a partial payment of $7.5 million, and then estimated $25 million in the out years for the debt service. The second fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, is dated, I believe, 3/21/2014. OMB Component 2715, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, under the appropriation of Design Engineering Construction, Kabata, and it is a zero fiscal note, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, question, Senator Dunleavy. Okay, any questions at all on the fiscal note? After all, she is a top 40 under 40, so we have to believe you. And then, by the way, too, Senator Fairclough is a recipient of the Athena Award, so it's the day of the women here. So, okay, there's no additional questions, comments. I think I lost my bill mover. Senator Fairclough, are you?
I'm capable of doing that, but you're
I suppose. Yeah, please. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I hesitate to speak on the bill, but I just want to put on the record that I actually drive the segment of the Glen Highway every day, if not 7 days a week at times. And the Glen Highway, when I head home at 5 or 6 or 7 o'clock at night, especially in the winter, I can wait up to 30 minutes to 2 hours to get home based on the traffic conditions on the highway. And sometimes that's related to snow or ice conditions and what we call Brake Light Hill, trying to go down and move through that corridor. So I just want those who don't drive that highway to know that it is heavily used. And we have deep ruts in that highway at times because of the freight mobility that happens through that corridor. So I just wanted to point out a couple of things in response to what people have said here today. First, passing Kabata has been a dream in the Anchorage area since 1960 or before, and the project has only increased in cost. I served on the Anchorage Assembly, and when I served there, I asked, why haven't we built this bridge? Everyone in San Francisco built a bridge, and they have great development on the other side. Why haven't we built this bridge? And we just couldn't get it together because it's a mega project. It's a big project. But it will lower the cost of goods and services that travel in the state of Alaska via truck, because they'll be able to save gas, which will decrease carbon emissions that sometimes Anchorage is facing, particulate matter violations in the past. It decreases drive time, and the freight traffic won't be competing with passengers that are trying to move inside the corridor. It will improve public safety. And again, I said it decreases the usage of just drive time on those segments. So for me, you should know that, again, looking backwards in the rearview mirror, when I served on the Anchorage Assembly, almost all of the available land in the municipality of Anchorage is located in my community, in the Eagle River Chugiak area. And we started building on wetlands and on steep slopes. In fact, if you follow my career, I would be labeled with a bullseye on my back for putting stricter regulations in for development on slopes and on wetlands, because the builders were coming in trying to seek a place for people to have homes, and they just couldn't find them. And so that available land, the cartoon was, I think it was a mountain goat on the side of a mountain, and that's where we were putting site condominiums. And I was arguing against that, saying it was going to be unsafe for our community. So one of the reasons that I support this project is because my community continues to experience development, and we welcome friends and neighbors to come in. But when that development starts to cause flooding problems with this, which this committee and the last committee I served on in finance over in the other body, all that I have addressed in major projects for my community have been flooding issues. And all of those flooding issues are being contributed by development that has been on wetlands or slopes, or development that isn't adequately planned. So this bridge is a long time in coming, and I so respect the community that is affected on either side of this proposed bridge location. I understand not wanting to move and just being vehemently opposed to the project, but this is a greater public service issue for the people that live in the Anchorage and the Mat-Su area. The bill as proposed has changed the financing structure significantly that I can now support it. There is safeguards that were actually even put in as late as today that require a phased approach, that the TIFIA, the federal government, will have to relook at all of the transportation numbers and the vehicle counts, and they will have to have confidence that those TIFIA loans can be repaid based on the numbers that they are given. So we have a second, if not a third, look at the transportation numbers that have been provided by the Kabata team. Kabata has to come back to us for any future expansion, and it really is based on a three-prong approach that could could cause some delay. It was spoken to delay of up to 6 months to a year on other projects that are currently in the queue under the State Transportation Improvement Plan. I don't know if you've had a project in the queue, but I've had many of them in the queue and have waited for 20 years for some of them to reach fruition. Repaving the Glen Highway comes to mind as at least a decade that we traveled in ruts to do that. So if you couldn't tell, I support the project. Again, three legs. The federal government is being asked to provide over a third. On top of that, the federal government, through the STIP and projects, movements, and being ready to be obligated, will provide another third. And the state of Alaska is being asked to provide a third for bonding. We've heard about that bonding today. The maximum number that has been presented to the committee is a good number. $25 million over 20 years would be what we would be on the hook for. That is an overstated number at this point in time. I think if you look at your fiscal note, you'll see that they have assumed an interest rate on that loan package of $300 million of 5%. That is 1.5% above the current rate that we could get if we were moving on the project today. But we'll have to wait for the TIFIA to approve that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I know there are lots of reasons to vote no on some of these things. I totally respect people who are looking at that long-term obligation and our value AAA credit rating for projects like these. But I think I've said it in this committee before, if we're going to look 10 or 20 years in the future, we won't move when the time is right to do the right thing for some of our people. I spoke when we were looking at fiscal policy planning, and I asked each of you, should we be looking as a state at a one-year plan, which seems to be, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful to the federal government, but just looking at 1 year and saying, well, we can do it this year because we can collect enough taxes, or should we look at three? Or is 5 year the right number, or is 10 year the right number? And I asked you to consider that 5 year was the right number, that we should be looking and making decisions that benefit the people of Alaska based on 5 years. And the reason I landed on that number was because of something Mr. Otteson said to us today. He said in the worst of the worst cases in the 1980s, some of the things that some of the things that went forward were some of the best things that could happen to our communities, that we continued to invest, that oil prices were low, but they rebounded in a 3 to 5 year period. So things may look particularly gloomy at this particular point when we try to look at a gas pipeline and other projects. But this is a good project. It is financed well, and it has appropriate safeguards. So I would encourage a yes vote on moving this out of committee.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bearcliff. Additional comments, Senator Olson?
I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree that the ability to try and develop residential areas over on Point McKenzie is nice to have, but is almost necessary if Anchorage is going to expand. But I think that in light of the fact that what I see in coming up is that I would say we're getting ready to go into a recession, and the people are going to be leaving the state, and so the pressure to expand is going to be less there. But more importantly, I just see this as a, you know, when we were flush with money and money, when we had reserves that were there, as well as a revenue surplus, that would have been a time to go ahead and go forward with it. But you don't go ahead and If you're unemployed or you lost your job on a personal level, you don't go ahead and start going into more debt to try and spend yourself out of. I mean, we always accuse the federal government of doing exactly that, spend yourself out of this depression. And so that's where my angst is and hesitation for taking on some of the financial burden that we may very well be there. And I think my hesitation also has to do with the audit that our auditor said, that what we're in directly, I wouldn't say conflicting with what the numbers were given to us, but certainly we're of a different level, and that we don't have the study done by Agnew and Beck. And so I don't disagree with what Senator Fairclough has said, but I'm just saying This is not the right time to do it.
Okay, fair enough. Additional comments, questions? Okay, I think Senator Fairclough, can you make the motion? Or Senator Kelly, want somebody? Go ahead, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate CS for 2D CS for House Bill Number 23 Finance 28-LS0141/R from committee as amended with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Okay. Objections?
I'll object to that.
Okay. There is objection to the bill moving to committee. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Chairman, can I speak to the objection?
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Speak to your objection.
As you know, as I look at our financial situation and looking into the future, I see a very dismal, dark alley with multiple financial pitfalls. We were all there listening to our finance, our legislative finance person paint us a picture that was not pretty for the next several years. In fact, went out to 10 years. And so because of that, I see that we are essentially shortchanging ourselves, because when we look at what's happened in the past, when we have had money and the boondoggles that they built, you know, the Anchorage Seafood Plant, the Point McKenzie Dairy Project, the Seward Grain Elevator, and even that Healy Clean Coal Project that were out there, the state has a nasty history of being able to go ahead and put the people's money out there into projects that were dubious at best. And so that's why, even though I'm not opposed to the project, I'm just saying the timing is not right, because, you know, what I see is we are flying at full throttle into a hurricane that's going to cause us a fiscal crisis, and this is another one of those nails in the coffin of financial responsibility. And that's why I object to it's the timing and not so much the project.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you maintain your objection?
Absolutely.
Okay. You obviously stated some projects that haven't worked out too well for the state, but I recall Red Dog has done pretty well in your area. So what I'm saying is this is a part of infrastructure, and I feel that's the purpose of government, is to build roads and bridges. And we do have a need in Anchorage for additional housing. It's a critical need, actually, and the folks that drive the Glen Highway every day, who get held up in traffic jams or wrecks for hours at a time, I think many of those will be glad to pay a $5 toll or whatever it takes to have another way to get home. So I would agree with Senator Fairclough. I think that the time is right. We have managed our money well. We saved our money during the surpluses, and we heard from our bond expert that we're in great shape from a debt standpoint, so we can take on this extra debt. So I feel very comfortable with it personally. Others, Senator Dudley?
Sure, thank you. Just briefly, to just tag on with both of the senators that said, I don't think Senator Wilson is alone in concern with storm clouds gathering on the horizon. And I was a skeptic of the original concept on the funding scheme. And to the credit of folks, some folks that are currently here in the room and others that have left, but to credit the folks, they came up with some ideas that I think make this a viable project today as we speak. As a matter of fact, this may end up being a model for future projects, because when you think about it, and I represent a portion of the valley that probably won't use this bridge very much. It's just the way the district is laid out. However, my folks will still use the Glen Highway. And over time, this will alleviate congestion on the Glen Highway and probably alleviate the need for a certain maintenance schedule that would be revised. And even widening the highway may be put off for some time, of course, saving money for the state. When you look on the Kinnick side of things, the Kinnick Goose Bay, that road, that area is probably the fastest growing, one of the fastest growing areas in the country, as a matter of fact. And it was just a few short years ago when we bought our property in the valley that the Parks Highway was two lanes. And then they upgraded it to four. And if you're staying there, if you're anywhere near the highway between 3:30 and 6:30 at night, and you think you were somewhere on the East Coast. And that takes me back to the East Coast, and I'll be brief. I grew up with tolls. I grew up with the concept of every 50, 60 miles, you're throwing quarters into a basket or you're paying for a road. This, I believe that this is going to be used well by a lot of folks on the Kinnick side of the valley. And, you know, it's interesting because initially this is going to be an Anchorage bridge. And the build-out's going to come out from Anchorage. And so with the build-out coming out from Kinnick and coming out from Anchorage, I'd say within a few short years, this bridge is going to be fully utilized. And we'll probably be back here looking at four lanes to deal with some of the congestion. I agree with my friend from Gulliver. I mean, he and I first met back in when I first came to the state of Alaska, when we had about 330,000 people. And then in 87, 88, it crashed, and some of us thought it might not come back. Population has doubled since then. And the chances are the population is going to probably stay where it's at, or grow, despite some of the things that we're looking at in the future. I agree with them. I think we've got some issues and some questions, and as Senator Faircloth said, I think there's some things we need to really work through in terms of what we're going to be spending our money on, both our operating and our capital going into the future. And if this was the same scheme last year, I'd have some questions. But I think with the funding scheme, and if you look out and you do a little scribbling on potential tolls and potential cars and just knowing that section of the valley and how where folks live and who's going to drive where, I see this project actually paying for itself. And I couldn't necessarily say that last year. I actually see the project over time, not just servicing the TIFIA loan, but servicing the state bond debt as well. And that's the part that makes me a lot more comfortable in supporting the bill at this point. Senator from Gulliver is absolutely right. We've been through some projects that were just borderline ridiculous, and hopefully we've learned from those experiences. And hopefully in the future, when we're looking at projects, that we look at a embedded pay-as-you-go or some form of sharing the cost amongst a number of different parties and not just the state. And so with that, I'll end it by simply saying, he's right, we need to be careful, and we could be facing an emptying of our coffers if we're not wise and we're not judicious and we're not taking care of the people's money. I just don't, at this stage of the game, I don't think this is a project that's going to do that. I think it's a project that's, I think the funding scheme is going to work for folks and for Alaska. We certainly have to be vigilant with regard to other projects that we're looking at. So thanks for the time.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dunley, additional comments, questions? Yeah, none of us have a crystal ball, but if we do nothing, we'll have nothing. So it's my profound statement. Okay, recording secretary, do you want to read the roll, please?
Senator Faircloth.
Yes.
Senator Hall.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Dunley.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
No.
Senator Dunleavy.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator Meyer.
Yes. Okay, with the vote of 5 yeas, 1 nay, then the bill does move out of committee. Thank you, committee members. Let's take a brief at ease, and we'll take up the bond bill next.
bringing Senate Finance back to order. The next bill before us is Senate Bill 218, Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. This bill was introduced at the request of our bond authority, Devin Mitchell. Suzanne, were you going to introduce the bill, or do you want to hand it off to Mr. Mitchell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Suzanne Armstrong, staff to Senator Meyer. I have just a couple preliminary statements regarding the bill, and then I can pass it off to Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, very good. Ms. Armstrong, go ahead.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Remind me of my objection. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Ms. Armstrong, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 218, which is before the Senate Finance Committee today, essentially accomplishes two things. It increases the borrowing limit of the municipal bond bank from $1 billion to $1.5 billion, and it also provides the opportunity to assist the University of Alaska with financing a heating or energy capital project, and it expands the list of bond bank activity to include the University of Alaska for an amount not to exceed $150 million.
Okay, very, very good. Ms. Armstrong, and again, I'll have Mr. Mitchell follow up on this, but it's my understanding this is a program that's been in place for some time. It's very popular, and that's why you've asked for the ceiling to be raised. And then we asked you if we could also include University of Alaska, as well as the municipalities in Alaska, and I think Mr. Mitchell indicated yes. But Mr. Mitchell, go ahead, please.
Sure, Devin Mitchell. This time I'm here as the executive director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, so I have a couple of hats that I work under, and that's entirely correct, Mr. Chair. That the bond bank currently has bonds outstanding of approximately $905 million. The bond bank is a program that provides lower cost funds to Alaskan municipalities and certain other entities in the state of Alaska. And so the end result of the program is it results in Alaskans paying less interest expense to third parties that are lending us their money because they have lower risk involved in that transaction. The bond bank is a AA-plus rated public corporation of the state of Alaska. As such, we issue AA-plus rated Alaska Municipal Bond Bank bonds in the primarily tax-exempt markets, and we pass that rate through to underlying communities that are in every corner of the state from Kaktovik to Nome or Northwest Arctic Borough to Unalaska to South Central, Fairbanks, Wasilla, Kenai, Southeast. So it is a popular program. With that cap at $1 billion, we have about $95 million left of capacity, and we currently have about $80 million of applications for the program at this time. And so without additional authority from the legislature, we wouldn't be able to continue to reduce costs for municipalities. And when you say, oh gosh, that's a lot of money, $900 million, that's not money that the state of Alaska is paying debt service on directly. They could be paying indirectly through the school debt reimbursement program or for health care facilities, Medicare, Medicaid, payments that contributions that the state makes could be reduced by the lower cost of capital that these municipalities are achieving. But otherwise, the core of the repayment of these funds are from the municipalities. And in the almost 40-year history of the bond bank program, there hasn't been a single case of payment default in the program. And so it's been a program that's worked as it was intended. And has provided great value over the last 5 years. We've averaged something between $125 and $150 million of bonds being issued per year, and that correlates to savings to municipalities in the the $10 to $20 million range, depending on the strength of the underlying credits and how they would have priced otherwise if there wasn't a bond bank program available. So we and as far as the university component goes, that's correct. The university is looking at a fairly major infrastructure need on the UAF campus, and the bond bank's strong credit ratings could be used to help facilitate the university's accessing the capital markets and minimizing the cost to the university, and to the extent the state of Alaska supports the university, to the state of Alaska as well.
Okay, very good. Mr. Mitchell, now, Mr. Mitchell, are you concerned any of these municipalities, or I guess some of them might even be villages, wouldn't be able to or would have the capacity to pay you back? And do you ask for some kind of collateral, or what kind of assurance do you have that we are going to get the money back?
Through the chair, the bond bank program has a financial advisor and a board of directors. Five people sit on the board. So our financial advisor will independently analyze a loan application that's submitted by an underlying community. They would be applying for either a general obligation or a revenue bond loan. In the case of a general obligation bond and a revenue loan, really, he looks at trends in the communities. Are there changes in revenue generation, population, economic activity, assessed value? What's the trend line? Other things that he considers would be the essentiality of the project. Is this core infrastructure? Is it something that the community would have to have, or is it something the community would like to have? And then if it's something that's more on the scale of like rather than have, is the credit pledge stronger? It should be a general obligation pledge. If it's a need to have it, then it's more like a revenue pledge. Water, sewer, a utility need that you know you're going to have that demand. And so so our financial advisor does that analysis. Our board of directors is made up of the commissioner of revenue and commerce, community and economic development, as well as three individuals from the private sector. And those individuals then review the financial advisor's recommendation and will give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on that loan application. We typically don't bring loans that we expect to receive a thumb down. We never do, actually, to the board, because we try to direct communities to success. And so we would either, if a weak application came to my office in consultation with our financial advisor, we would work with the community to suggest other programs, to suggest other funding means for that other than borrowing money, because it's not a grant program, it's not a risk-taking program, it's 100% of the time you're going to repay your loan program. And so far, should knock on the table, it's worked out. There's been a couple of close calls over the years, because sometimes, as has been pointed out by the committee in prior discussions, there have been tough times in Alaska and tough times in certain communities, but the communities have always stepped up and made good on their obligations.
Excellent. And then, Mr. Mitchell, this is the power plant for University of Alaska. That's an option they have. They don't have to use this source. The university can borrow themselves, but it was believed that this would give them a lower interest rate than if they were to bond themselves. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct. There are other allowances in statute for the bond bank to participate in loans. The one that stands out is the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association, that we have an authority to lend money to that entity that we've never utilized, because the point in time they thought they might need to borrow money to fund up reserves, they didn't, it turned out, and it really doesn't make sense at this point in time, and they no longer have that need. So it provides a financial option, but it would certainly not be a requirement if there were other financially better opportunities for the funding of the facility.
Okay, thank you. Questions from committee? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first question is, what is repaid each year, or are we set up like that for the bond bank? How much are you paying off in loans?
Through the chair, Senator Farquhar, it's a legitimate, good question. We pay off about 35 million a year. It varies, but we have a relatively mature portfolio, meaning that from this year, every year we have declining debt service. We don't have level debt service because the bonds are all staggered into the past rather than having been issued just at one time.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're obviously interested in helping Fairbanks, the University of Fairbanks, meet their energy needs. And so there's a maximum, as I understand it, in this bill before us that proposes an increase or an allowance of $150 million for the university to access those funds. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, yes.
Mr. Mitchell, then there's an additional $350 million that's being allowed. So can you speak to why the $35 million that's being retired on an annual basis isn't enough with the $150 million, or what is your expectation of the additional $350 million in bonding authority that is before the committee?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, it's obviously difficult to predict the future. Based on recent past, we've been issuing, as I said earlier, over the last 5 years, $125 to $150 million a year. And with that current in the hopper known amount of about $80 million and just $95 million left as of a month ago, we're certainly in the next 12 to 18 months in a position that we would expect to have a high potential of reaching our statutory limit to borrow without additional authority. As far as where that $350 million would go, it will depend on future projects being developed at the local level that obviously have to make fiscal sense for those local municipalities, and they have to have the ability to repay those projects. So I'm uncertain where they would be.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How can you speak to the committee about how the bond bank's credit rating interacts with the state of Alaska credit rating, or does it?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, it's very closely aligned with the state's credit rating. We have a moral obligation structure that's established in statute. Moral obligation structure is where you have a reserve fund required by statute and a reporting on the sufficiency of that reserve fund required in statute. So we have to tell you if we're deficient, if there's a deficiency in our reserve fund. And in addition to that, we have an annual appropriation in the operating budget that automatically replenishes that reserve fund in the event of a underlying borrower default. And so the combination of those two things, so we have a moral obligation squarely on the table. So over the years, we've tried to be creative in how we maximize the value that the state's offering in this program. If you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound sort of thing. And so if you have a moral obligation, you're behind in the cycle. If you actually had a default, legislature, if we had a default tomorrow, is it going to make its way into the operating budget? Well, maybe. If it happened 2 weeks from now, definitely not. And so if you're in that behind mode of having to ask in the event of a failure, you don't have the same type of strong security feature as you do if you say we're already out in front and we have the money available to us in the event that there's a default. And so it's actually a moral obligation on steroids, if you will.
Okay. Two more questions, Mr. Chairman. Could you talk to the committee about the division of loans that are out there in communities as far as urban and rural? Is there any kind of segmentation inside of the bonding structure that provides for smaller communities to have access to the funds, or is it just sort of on-time delivery that they have to ask for the project, and if money's available, then if the project's worthy, it goes forward, or is there criteria that allow some distribution, at least regionally, of the funds available to cities?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, there are policies, regulations, and statutory references to prioritization of the type of projects that would be funded, but it is not there is no regional differentiation as far as how the program has worked. Historically, we have lent money to our largest municipality, Anchorage, and some of our smallest. The smallest are often more difficult to lend to because they have very limited ability to repay, and it doesn't make sense to go through the expense of a bond issue unless you have a certain critical mass, even though you can save a lot on interest expense. If you're borrowing $50,000, you're not going to issue bonds. So our largest borrowers right now, Sitka is our largest borrower. Kenai is one of our largest borrowers. Kodiak is one of our largest borrowers. And Junos, one of our largest borrowers. So those four all are over 10% of the pool. I think the largest Sitka is 14%, something like that.
Thank you. And lastly for today, in deference to the conversation that we had earlier today about the maximum capacity of debt that the state can carry and still maintain its AAA credit rating, when you're looking at projects that are coming forward and this proposal to increase, some would say, by 50% your authority, how are you balancing that first against the state being reflective of the state's current condition to maintain our AAA, and then are you also being prospective in our look at the municipalities and how they're taking on debt? And the reason I'm asking is because as we were having this discussion on the PERS and the TERS pension obligation, and I believe it's 67 and 68, the ruling coming out of Gadsby, I could be off by a number, but under those provisions, we're going to have to start allocating some of the debt that is owed by individual cities, and you've named them, Kodiak, Sitka, Juneau, Kenai, Anchorage, Fairbanks. We're going to allocate some of that debt over there. So are we anticipating that prospectively as we're considering this additional expansion?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, there was a couple of questions in there. And the concept of debt capacity, while moral obligation debt does have some play in debt capacity or credit ratings, the strong history of this particular program and its working as strictly a credit enhancement, not a means of otherwise funding projects, it really doesn't play a large role currently in our debt capacity analysis. The ability of the communities to support obligations is one that's going to be very unique to each community that considers borrowing, and the concept of having to account at the local level on your balance sheet for your PERS liability is probably going to strengthen, it will potentially strengthen the bond bank relative to the independent credit, because if you have a very large liability showing up on your balance sheet that wasn't previously there, it's certainly not going to be a positive factor when an external analyst is looking at your fiscal situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Additional questions? Okay. Let's just take a brief at ease for a second. Okay, we're back. Okay, if there's no other questions on this bill, we're gonna hold it over and probably take it up Monday. We're going to cancel tomorrow morning's meeting, so that's good news. And what we're a little bit of a change. We're going to take a public testimony at 1:30 on the capital budget, the governor's capital budget, and then the feedback we get from the public testimony on Thursday, and then again on Saturday. Then we'll do the CS and probably have a CS ready for Monday. Does that sound right, Senator or Ms. Armstrong?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. I didn't have anybody signed up for public testimony on this bill. So, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll go ahead and close the public testimony on the Municipal Bond Bank Senate Bill 218. So that's official. And, like I said, we'll probably bring this up Monday morning. So just for planning purposes, no meeting tomorrow morning at 9. We do have scheduled public testimony 1:30, is that right? Or is it 1? 1:30, okay. So we'll do that. Friday, I would anticipate a fairly light meeting in the morning, and then Saturday afternoon, continued public testimony at starting at 12 o'clock. So with that, if there's nothing else, come for a committee, we are adjourned.